welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm the Dive Mistress.
And today we have quite a show for you, examining a few movies with the, if not exact same premise, eerily similar premises.
Well, two of them are almost the exact same, and then the third is just something else.
Entirely. But you see, you're going to understand the thematic link when we get there, believe you me.
I hope so.
Okay.
But first, some random crap.
I love random crap. Well, what do we have to talk about?
Well, you're first on the list.
Oh, I am. Okay. Actually, I did want to do a follow-up to some random crap from a few weeks ago when I talked about my love of the TV show Archer. Mm-hmm. And that the guy who does the voice for Archer is the star of a different show called Bob's Burgers on Fox. And I had been spectacularly, weirdly, I took it far too personally in the insult, when a reviewer I normally respect referred to him as a stellar voice actor, because my thought had been, well, he has the star of these shows, H. John Benjamin, has a funny voice, but that doesn't actually make him a good voice actor. It just means he's a guy with a funny voice that works both as the dad on an animated series and, ironically, as a spy on a James Bond parody. Okay? So, I defended that position. And that position was backed up by H. John Benjamin himself.
Oh, what did he say?
In an interview with that same reviewer, the reviewer talked about what a great voice actor he is, and he's like, I really don't think I'm a good voice actor, a lot of people find my voice funny, and I'm glad it works for the parts. Score! Yes! H. John Benjamin feels exactly the same as I do about his voice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was actually pretty great. Because I already liked the guy, but knowing that he is self-aware just makes me like him that much more.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
I was so happy. I know it's a pretty ridiculous thing to get excited about, but I'm going to stand by it. So,
well, you know, you take it where you can get it, right? So
exactly. Thank you for recognizing that. All right. So, did you have something you wanted to discuss here on the random crap section?
Yeah, I do. First thing, I went to see, I saw Drive Angry.
Oh, with Nicolas Cage.
Not
America's
Taylor,
Crazy
yeah.
Man.
Which is, it's weird. He's actually kind of understated in this one.
That's not what
yeah,
we go
doesn't,
to a movie
like, completely
with
lose his shit like he does in every other movie.
Considering the premise of this movie, I'm very surprised.
Well, he just drives a car. That's basically it. He's tracking down some Satanists to try and stop them from murdering his granddaughter.
Okay.
He's a baby. I should point that out. and that's really the whole movie. What I wanted to talk or complain about, I guess, is this is going to be another rant about 3D. The film is in 3D. It was shot in 3D.
Okay.
So it's not a transfer. So I saw it in 3D because that's how you're supposed to see it. But I don't understand why it was made in 3D.
Because then they could charge $14 for a ticket instead of $8.
But it doesn't enhance the movie in any way. There are a couple of moments that were done specifically for the 3D effect, and it's so painfully obvious.
So, like, someone hands a cigarette right to the camera or something like that?
Well, no, it's William Fichtner flips a coin.
Oh.
And it goes, you know, and it's extreme high angle, so the coin goes, like, right up into your face. And then, like, another point, I think he, like, shoots something, or just shit goes flying, and it's flying right at you. But other than that, I mean, this is a road movie, basically. And it just, the 3D doesn't enhance the story at all. And it wasn't filmed in such a way that the 3D would provide a really rich depth of field or anything like that either. It's just like, you have 3D for a couple of lame effects. You don't really seem to understand the visual purpose of three dimensions other than your cheapo effects. So it bothers me because a lot of movies are like this, a lot of 3D film. And so I'm just using Drive Angry as an example. I enjoyed it. It's a fun movie to watch. Don't get me wrong. But I don't understand why this
movie... It needed to be in 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think this is another perfect example of a film studio just trying to jump onto a bandwagon in the hopes of eking a few more dollars out of an audience. Because there's no... I mean, it was like, you saw Resident Evil Afterlife. There was nothing 3D about that movie.
I'm going to disagree with you. I thought the director had a much better understanding Rasp of what 3D can accomplish in that movie.
I see. I was not impressed by the 3D of that film at all. I even saw it in 3D. So if you consider this to be blah compared to Resident Evil Afterlife, I can only imagine how blah I'm going to find this thing. Oh, my God.
I mean, this is a thing, though. Maybe just because I'm kind of cheap, but for a movie like Drive Angry, you know, which, I mean, it benefits from, you know, being on a big screen and all, I really wouldn't recommend people shelling out the extra money to see it in theaters. Just wait for DVD.
Yeah, because it's just a silly, stupid, violent action movie that doesn't really need that kind of production value.
I mean, it's like I said, it's a fun movie to watch, but it doesn't need to be in three dimensions. It's not worth the higher price.
Okay. Take that, Nicolas Cage. All right. I have a completely, and I'm going to say sadly unrelated to Nicolas Cage thing to discuss.
We don't always have to be talking about Nicolas Cage. It's okay.
No, but we do both enjoy it quite a bit. My point, oddly, is about the movie, well, both the movie Freddy vs. Jason and the films of Uwe Boll.
Okay.
So, as you know, Freddy vs. Jason is one of the movies that I watch a lot when I'm working.
I love it. I don't care. Who knows?
So, I mean, it's always on. It's not a surprise. But I never really noticed something before this last time I watched it when I was writing something last week. If you follow me on Twitter, you know what that is. But I'm not going to mention it on the APOD. I guess I'm encouraging you to follow me on Twitter. Anyway, point is, I'm watching it, and I noticed something in the movie that I'd never noticed before. No, before you ask, this isn't the chick from Lost. I had already seen her. She's an extra in one of the high school scenes. But anyway, okay, you know that actor from that movie we saw, I'm trying to remember his name.
Fletcher?
Brendan Fletcher, okay.
Oh, yes! I'm the best!
You are the best at remembering things. I'm not going to deny that. The point is, Brendan Fletcher remembers his brother who died.
Yeah.
Right, who had committed suicide, but of course, actually, Freddy murdered him years earlier. He has a flashback to his suicide in a tub, and I swore I recognized the actor. I'm like, who is that? And then I check the credits, and it's Zach Ward, okay? Another Vancouver actor.
Yeah.
And here's the thing I find interesting. The two guys in that scene, Brendan Fletcher and Zach Ward, Uwe Boll would hire Zach Ward to play the guy who shoots up a small town in the movie Postal, an adaptation of a video game. Then 2 years later, he would make a more serious movie about a guy who shoots up a small town, Rampage, and hire the other actor in that scene, Brendan Fletcher, to play the guy. No, I just think it's a weird... I'm not saying Zach Ward called his friend Brendan Fletcher and said, "You gotta work with this German guy. He'll let you shoot up a small town." I'm not saying it's anything that meaningful. I'm just saying it's one of these really weird film coincidences that happens from time to time.
Right.
And I thought it was interesting and worth noting. Oh. Especially because Zach Ward doesn't actually have a line in that scene because he's all entirely dubbed by Robert Englund.
I suppose he doesn't, does he?
No. So, yeah, there you go.
Wow. All right, then.
I think we've all learned a valuable lesson today.
Right. Okay. One more piece of random... two more.
Ooh, I like two.
Oh, yeah, I got ahead of myself there. So I went to the movies again, and this saw Battle Los Angeles.
Okay, why would you do that?
Well, because I was out with a friend of mine, and we were at the bar, and then we decided we were going to go to the movies. And I was curious to see this movie because I've seen Skyline.
Oh, right. The film that it is connected to because of underhandedness.
Well, no, I think it's just, this is sort of like Skyline from the other side of things. So Skyline was about, you know, just sort of random people caught up in the alien invasion. Los Angeles is about the army side of the invasion.
Of essentially the same story.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, people sort of take it as like a mashup between Black Hawk Down and Skyline or Independence Day. You know, like they sort of, they go to all these other alien invasion movies, and they're right to do so because, let's face it, that's what it is. But, I mean, it was entertaining. It's a bit long. It drags a little. And some of the dialogue is quite terrible. But, I thought it was exciting and entertaining at times. Some really good violence.
Well, I do enjoy really good violence, but is it something that we've got to rush out and see, or will it play on the small screen?
Well, this is, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say. It's all handheld, the entire movie.
Okay, well, then I'm not going to see it in a big screen.
A couple of scenes, but it's not like, it's not nauseating like Blair Witch was for a lot of people.
Yeah, but I couldn't even watch the Bourne movies on the big screen.
Well, that's just...
I get motion sick, it's true.
Cam problems, but it's meant to sort of put you in the action, of course, that's the whole point. But it's also a lot of close-up, which I just personally don't like. It's just an aesthetic thing.
Yeah.
So I guess it just depends on how good you are with that kind of stuff. It doesn't generally bother me too much. So I was okay with it on the big screen. I mean, at the points where, like, you know, when the violence kicks in, it's a little less wobbly.
Right.
I hesitate to call it shaky cam because that's not what it is. And so, you know, they make a point of you being able to see the horrible violence that's happening all around you. And like I said, it's well done.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to see it in theaters, maybe wait for, like, Cheap Tuesday or Matinee or something.
Okay. Because I just, you know me, I cannot get over this anyway, I'm not gonna get into this whole thing, but you know my feelings about shaky cam, where...
It's not shaky cam, though. This is different.
Yeah, but I didn't like it in Black Hawk Down either, so, you know.
Well, I actually saw half of Black Hawk Down.
Okay.
I don't know why.
All right. So we have yet another piece of news,
I know,
I understand.
We're, like, making up for our really sparse random crap segments from earlier. One more piece of random crap. Both the Count and I received the same email, and it's announcing a movie coming out on April 1st, this isn't a joke, called Blooded. And it's being released in the UK on April 1st. It's a UK film. And then will be available on iTunes, Sky Box Office, Filmflex, and Love Film shortly after that. And it's... Why this is special for us is because it's one of our favorite subgenres of horror. Hunting humans.
Yay!
We love movies about people who hunt people.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to this one, and if they send us free copies of it, we'll even cover it.
We will even do that.
Well, we totally would have gone to the theater had it been opening in, you know, our country, but it's not. So
it's
I don't think we can be asked any more than what I've just offered.
But yeah, so UK fans, keep an eye open. April 1st, Blooded.
Yeah, we're not going to spoil it by telling you what the premise is, but it actually does sound like an interesting premise beyond, you know, just generic hunting humans. The specific reason and ways sounds like it could be either very interesting or unbearably pretentious.
Yeah, I'm going to hold off comment on what I think is going to happen.
Okay. That's very responsible of you.
Thanks.
Okay. So, I think we're actually ready to talk about what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are. Movies we watched.
Recently. stuff.
Okay, first movie. What am I going to say about this movie? Okay, it's called Don't Look Up. And that... no lead-in. We'll go straight to the synopsis.
Well, I was just going to say, it is rare that a film isn't ruined by an Eli Roth cameo. But I'm going to give the movie this. Before I synopsize, it was not ruined by its Eli Roth cameo. Now, you
No, I think probably because he doesn't talk very much.
That would likely be it, yes.
Okay, so here we go. Don't Look Up. A Romanian folk tale tells the story of a woman who made a pact with the devil. She can marry any man she wanted in return for her daughter, whom the devil will impregnate with his seed. In the, I think it's the 1920s, a movie was being made about it, but the film was never finished and was lost to time. Now, a film crew is on location at the original studio in Romania to make a new movie about the old folktale. As filming progresses, the director becomes increasingly unhinged as he obsesses over his movie, and the crew grow wary of his sanity and their safety. Thus concludes my synopsis of Don't Look Up.
And that is an excellent synopsis. You've completely nailed what the movie is about. And I'm just going to say that I was surprised to not hate this movie. All I knew about it going in is that it had an Eli Roth cameo.
Oh, so. I didn't know that. I sat down to watch. I'm like, Eli Roth is in this.
I knew that going in, and I was in a very, very. I mean, not that you want to put me in a bad mood. Tell me, I'm going to have to hear Eli Roth's voice, but
right.
He is dispatched in the first, you know, minute and a half. Spoiler alert. And then, you know, the film actually, I thought, got pretty interesting. There's some wonderful, there's a lot of really good effects in the movie. But beyond that, I found the director's story of obsession, if not full-on compelling, definitely more interesting than the usual that I see in movies like this. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. You
know, I didn't really like the guy. No, he's not a likable character.
Me neither. I didn't like him at all, actually.
But I was at least... How do I put this? I was at least interested to see where the film was going. Mm-hmm. And I think the film is smart enough to have... How do I put this? The main character, and I think I can spoil this part because we find it out pretty early, is a medium. He can talk to dead people. And that is what has underwritten his career as a horror filmmaker.
Well, no, he doesn't really talk to dead people. He sort of experiences or sees things. And that inspires his creation.
Well, I think he's a medium, but, you know, not... he does kind of... He hears messages from the dead. I think it's...
Like, he talks to a dead person.
Yeah.
But I think that has more to do with him losing touch with reality than his abilities as a medium.
Okay, well, that's debatable, and I'm not going to debate you on it right now, because I don't think this film really needs to be debated. But the thing I found interesting was that other than him, who obviously has a reason for acting the crazy way he does, in addition to his character, I thought that 90% of the other characters in the movie act really rationally based on the situations they're in. And
yeah. No, I'll give you that for sure.
And that's what I really liked about it, because people, again, I'm not even going to bother with spoiler alert. It's a movie about a spooky, you know, film being made. Yeah, somebody dies in the crew. Everyone has the exact reaction you'd expect, which is, hey, let's stop making this movie. You know, because to everyone but him, it's just a job. Mm-hmm. And they have no particular need to stop. And of course, then there's the producer, because like to him, it's an obsession. To the producer, there's a lot of money tied up. So there are two people who want to see the movie keep going, but everyone else are just pretty much happy to leave. And I really respected that, because they had all the characters act, I felt, fairly believably in that situation. And I really, given the other film we're about to talk about, I think that it actually worked. It helped the film that everyone acted in such a believable fashion, given the, you know, the supernatural situation they were finding themselves in. And there's even a great scene of, I'm not going to say where it is in the movie, of everyone just like, let's get the hell out of here, fleeing the set at once. Yeah. I really loved that visual, honestly. It was just like dropping whatever they were doing and just getting gone because it is not worth it.
No, those parts were good. And while I was watching it, some of the effects really struck me. And I thought, I'm like, oh, this is kind of reminiscent of a lot of J-horror, just the way the effects are handled.
Especially the backpack of evil.
And then I knew this, but forgot. This is actually a remake.
It's a remake of a Japanese horror Nakata movie. Oh, what? Well, okay. Now everything about this movie makes sense. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you know.
Oh, my God.
That accounts for a lot of, you know, sort of what's best about this movie is because I think it's just lifted directly out of the original film.
Yeah, okay. Suddenly, I get the movie now, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
However, it does, I think it sort of, it falls apart towards the end. Mostly because I didn't like the director character to begin with.
Yeah.
And it's just this sort of, this weird shit happens at the end of the movie that I thought was kind of stupid and didn't make sense. And
well, how do I put this? When the entire movie is building up to a reveal of exactly what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of know because we've been hearing this story of the gypsy girl and her pact with the devil for the whole movie, but when it all has to come together with what the director is experiencing, it just doesn't fit at all.
No.
You know, and I found that, I will admit, I found that really disappointing because I was really hoping there was going to be a big reveal that tied everything together, but no, it really doesn't work largely. And yeah, you're right. That kind of ticked me off as well because
yeah.
There had been so many good things leading up to there, but you're right. The director is so fundamentally unlikable that when he's now the only character left in the movie, you're not really interested in seeing it anymore.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, because I think there were a lot of good things in this movie. I think it looks great, you know, and like we said, Backpack of Evil, when you see it, you'll know what we mean, and it's a fantastic...
Backpack of Evil.
The Backpack of Evil is a great effect.
That is a phenomenal effect.
Yeah.
And then there's another one where there's a man, but you only see part of him depending on where you're looking.
Yeah.
Also that's really well done. That's very cool.
Yeah, I really liked that one too. So no, there's actually a lot to like in this movie. It's just, right. The plot completely falls apart at the end and it just wraps up in a totally unsatisfying fashion. But from an experiential standpoint, there's definitely stuff worth seeing in this movie.
I guess. I think you enjoyed it more than I did.
No, I really did like it more than you do, but at the same time, I've got to say that, yeah, I completely understand your misgivings, and I wouldn't wholeheartedly recommend this movie. So, why don't we move on to a movie that I'm pretty much sure we can agree on a distaste for?
Okay. Our next film is called Skeleton Crew. And actually, this is kind of a funny story. When I read about Don't Look Up. I remember I read the synopsis to you.
Yeah.
And then you immediately were like, oh my God, you have to look up this movie called Skeleton Crew because they're exactly the same.
I swear I had read about a movie 1 week earlier and I swear it had been the exact same synopsis almost word for word.
Okay, so here we go. Skeleton Crew. In the 1970s, the head doctor of an insane asylum tortured and murdered a number of his patients. He is believed to have filmed his crimes, but the movies are never found. Now, 30 years later, a film crew is on location at the asylum to make a movie based on the killings. They stumble upon the doctor's hidden screening room, in which they find the lost snuff movies, and the film's director, Steve, starts obsessing over them. His obsession leads to rewrites and a demand for more violence in his own movie. The end.
The end. Okay. So, the first thing I want to talk about with this movie is the thing I just wrote an article about, for anyone who doesn't listen to the AVOD, which is that the first quarter of this movie are devoted to the film within a film. So,
yeah, to the point where I was watching and I'm like, am I watching the right movie?
I had the same reaction.
I had to go back and check.
Exactly. Because so much of this film is a fake movie that has nothing to do with the plot.
But you don't know that, though. You think you're watching an actual movie.
Exactly.
And then you're waiting for the whole film within a film, doctor killing patient stuff. And then, like, you get to the doctor killing patients, but it's not a film within a film, and you're like, but maybe I'm watching some, like, because there are lots of movies about doctors who kill their patients. So.
Well, actually, the point I was trying to remember when I was writing this article, what was that movie that we covered on the show last year that had the exact same plot as the fake movie in this, where there's
Autopsy?
A car? Was it called Autopsy?
Yeah, is it the one with Jason Patrick?
I don't. No. It was the one where, like, there's a bunch of college students. They're leaving Mardi Gras. And they get into.
Yeah, that's Autopsy.
Was Jason Patrick in that?
Yeah, he's the doctor.
I totally did not remember that was Jason Patrick.
Totally, it is.
But okay, the movie was Autopsy. Now I can add that to my article. The point is, like, the fake movie they're making is the exact same movie as the movie Autopsy. Which is weird, because I'm like, didn't we already watch this movie for the AVOD? And it stops 22 minutes into a 90-minute movie. And, like, that's how much of this movie doesn't happen. And you realize, oh my god, none of what I just saw matters.
Yeah.
And that really pissed me off, because it's only after the film within a film ends and we get to the people making a movie that they start even giving us backstory. So rather than using that first 20 minutes to, like, give us all the backstory gradually, it's just completely wasted time that has no reason to be in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that pissed me off.
It's weird, though, because you say, yeah, it's a 90-minute movie, which is pretty standard, but it drags.
Oh, does it drag?
Oh, my God, I got really bored at one point. But, yeah, let's talk about the film within a film. So, they're making a movie about what they presume to have happened in this insane asylum 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And then they find the snuff film. So, you've got a movie and a movie and a movie. And then, but then it just goes completely off the rails.
Yeah.
Because toward the end of the film, the characters realize that they're in a movie.
In the movie we're watching.
It's like
Skeleton.
That you're watching. So it's like sort of it's doubly or triply, quadruply self-reflexive. I mean, it's recursive to the point where it just, you've kind of lost all touch with what's happening.
Well, and I think what's so frustrating about it is it takes this crazy idea where there's a scene in the movie where they look at the editing bay where the guy put together his snuff films, I guess.
Yeah.
And in it they find the movie that they're starring in, the movie we're watching.
Yeah, and you have this Spaceballs moment. Where everything that's happening now is happening now.
Yes.
But what was really irritating to me is that they don't fast forward to then.
I know!
I'm like, just watch the end of the movie.
What are they thinking? But more to the point, what really pisses me off is doing that opens this giant door to self-awareness and if you knew you're in a movie, how would you behave? And then the decision the characters come to is, I swear to God, we should behave exactly like characters in a slasher movie behave, because that always works out so well for them.
Yeah, they even have a conversation about that. We should stick together. And then one guy's like, I'm going to stay here. But you just determined that you're in a slasher movie.
Well, no, but the other characters are like, we've got to go back and find the guy who's missing. And I'm like, no, That's how all the other characters in slasher movies get murdered. Yeah. They don't just leave. And it's like, and you actually have a character say, you know, it's like, only one person survives in a slasher movie. Well, then why are you all going along with this plan if you know five of you are going to die? It's the kind of movie, a slasher movie, where somebody lives at the end, which, let's face it, most direct-to-video slasher movies, nobody gets out alive.
And that's exactly what happens, because there's the director's cut epilogue.
Oh my god. But yeah, it's like, this film, as you said, with this ridiculous amount of recursive self-referential stuff, opened the door to something amazing, and then immediately slammed it shut one split second later. I'm like, no, what are you doing? Like, this is a very bleak and, you know, uninteresting movie, but then you had this chance, and then it completely throws it away.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. And that might be the most frustrating part of all.
But it's like, because it's so rare that one of these direct-to-video slasher films does something different or interesting. To see a film get this close to doing, and my fingers are pretty close together, just for those of us not watching the video, doing something this close to fascinating, and then backing off at the last minute, it's like, dudes, you were already doing a cheap, crappy-looking shot-on-video movie. You know, go all the way and do something totally off the wall with it. But
yeah.
They just didn't, you know, for whatever reason.
No, they fall back onto convention, which maybe is supposed to be a comment on convention, because once they decide that they're going to behave exactly as they should, then the movie unfolds exactly as you think it does, and there are all kinds of logical problems and things that don't make sense.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, so I can see how someone would think that they're being clever because, oh, look, we're turning convention around in on itself. It's like, well, no, that's not what you're doing at all. No. You're cannibalizing.
Yeah. Like... It's true. And it, as you can tell, it really made me angry.
Yeah.
Okay, it's possible that it only really made me angry because I actually saw something promising. But in my defense, I only saw something promising for a second, damn it.
Yeah.
And then the film betrayed me. Just like it betrayed everyone who watched it.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah, I got really angry there, and I'm not sure why. Oh, but come on. Like, this actually, you gotta give me that. Like, it had a chance there for a second.
Oh, know? Absolutely, yeah.
But anyway, I guess we should move on from Skeleton Crew.
All right, let's talk our last film of the evening.
Evening, and I think the thing that warrants the most attention, frankly...
I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
Well, it's interesting because it's rare that both the Dive Mistress and myself both write an article about a movie we've seen.
Uh-huh.
But that actually happened this time.
Yeah.
Like, we both felt this film was worth reviewing in print and not just talking about here. So
worthy of comment.
You know?
Our last horror movie of the evening is titled The Last Horror Movie.
Sorry. I shouldn't laugh. It's a stupid thing.
This movie is about Kevin. Kevin is a serial killer. He roams the city with a cameraman, killing people. He's produced a film about himself and his exploits, and has hidden it inside a copy of a movie called The Last Horror Movie. Kevin then waits for someone to rent the video, follows them home, and kills them. But only after they've watched his movie, so they know just what's in store. The end.
The end. There's something you were polite enough not to mention, but I'm going to mention it now, because for the entire movie, Kevin, this unbelievable dick, right, who's so impressed with himself and how original he is.
He's so, oh god, no, he's like, okay, he's a total psychopath, yes, but he's also an insufferable narcissist.
Yes, right, he's so impressed with himself, and I'm like, every second of the movie, I'm like, so what, when you were in film school, you saw Man Bites Dog? And now you've decided to live it out? Because that's what the movie is.
Yeah, the presentation of The Last Horror Movie is a documentary. It's Kevin talking at you, because the way the whole film is set up is that you're watching this, the last horror movie. So you actually get like 5 minutes of what's supposed to be a real horror movie. And then that ends and you get Kevin's talking head telling you about himself and his exploits. And you're watching, what you're watching is the last horror movie that you're ever going to see. Don't you understand? It's so brilliant.
Get it? Wink.
Yeah. So, so the whole movie is just this sort of first person. I don't even know how to describe it.
How do I put this? Intellectual, like an masturbation, I would say.
Yeah. That's a good word for it. And it's just, oh, it's so pretentious and arrogant and tiresome.
Oh my God. And what I loved about it, it's like, I swear to God, it's like someone took like a first year ethics class at university and decided everyone in the world was a phony and a traitor to humanity, except for him. So he's going to be making a movie about how basically we are all killing you. Dude, just by being awake, you're killing Africans, okay? So why not be a serial killer? You already are one.
Well, here we go. Here's a perfect example of how the logic in this movie doesn't make any sense. Never mind the fact that the writer and Kevin exhibit a profound misunderstanding of knowing right from wrong and caring about right from wrong.
And there are two different things.
Those are two very different things. A psychopath understands the difference, but doesn't care.
Yeah.
And he kind of, anyway, the point I was going to make, which I've almost forgotten now. What the hell was I talking about? Oh, I completely lost it. No, it was brilliant.
Oh, no. Well, we're going to keep discussing the movie a little
more.
Yes,
okay. Came back to me. Here we go.
Okay, go.
Hold on.
Please.
Yes, at one point, Kevin is pontificating.
As he is wont to do.
As he is wont to do. He's talking about, this example of, you know, children starving in Africa, and, you know, you wouldn't help them. You wouldn't, you know, for the cost of a television, you could feed a child in Africa, but you're not going to sell your television to feed that child, are you? You're not. What if I told you that if you sold your TV, you could save this woman's life, you know, your next door neighbor? Would you do that instead? Of course you would. And then he sort of goes on and on for a little while about how this makes you a bad person. Never mind the fact that if you sold your television, you wouldn't be able to watch his goddamn movie and listen to him rant about this shit.
Which is really his goal. So, you know, he's being facetious. But beyond that, like, the morality of that is so easily to explain. Like, this guy would last all of 10 seconds in a serious debate. It's only because it's a monologue that his ideas haven't been completely dismissed.
Right.
Oh, also, he's a cannibal.
Not only that, he feeds his human meat to his friends.
Yeah. Because he's that much
of
a scum.
Barbecue.
Yeah, just because he's that, an extra level scumbag.
Well, you know, no, that's just, not only did he watch Man Bites Dog, but he's also seen Fried Green Tomatoes, yeah. And I would wager Funny Games.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, Fried Green Tomatoes. You taught us that making barbecue is the best way to get rid of murder victims. Also teaching us that, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But people refuse to admit that that's where the writer of Fried Green Tomatoes got the idea. You know it is. Oh God, Kevin. It's like, it's weird because every second in this movie, you just want to reach into the TV and slap that guy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh wow. And then, and then he almost entirely, he makes his career as a wedding videographer, but then, the groom at one of the things is a scumbag who roughed up his cameraman. Mm-hmm. And then he murders that guy. And I'm like, wow, I really hope that, you know, the person who saw that happen doesn't mention the groom roughing up the cameraman of the videographer. Cause it seems like you could easily be caught for that one.
Yeah.
Cause this was not one of the crimes he tried to hide. He actually proudly shows off the newspaper report of that particular murder. But then we get to the film's other problem, and I think it's a pretty major problem, which is, how shall I put this? The film can't possibly have the effect they want it to have.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, I remember this story years ago, and I'm sure it was, you know, some jerk like Harry Knowles or something talking about the Blair Witch Project.
Some jerk.
You know, one of those jerks on the internet.
Yeah.
He said, his glass house shattering. Right, some jerk on the internet talking about the movie Blair Witch Project, and what he had said was that he didn't really feel that the Blair Witch Project works on the big screen. The Blair Witch Project, his idea was, best works if you, like, someone hands you a videotape that, you know, with no label on it, that seems to be like an underground bootleg deal that, you know, someone was going to distribute, but they lost their nerve because it, you know, maybe is of a real murder. No credits or anything, just the footage. And I'm like, yeah, I think the Blair Witch Project would work better that way. Likewise, this entire film is based on the premise that you rented a movie called The Last Horror Movie and were surprised by his appearance.
That was taped over.
That was taped over, exactly. But you didn't do that. Nobody ever did that. The VHS box talks about, you know, Kevin and his murder spree. I watched it on a DVD, which I'm pretty sure he didn't tape over. Also, I don't live in London where he kills people.
Oh, he doesn't live in London either. I think he's in Bath or someplace.
Okay, well, sorry. The suburb of London where he kills people. Does that really matter? You know.
That's a suburb of London. Anyway, no, it falls apart in the same way that a drive-in massacre only works if you're at the drive-in.
Yeah. Well, no, or in a movie theater. It works if
But the last horror movie would only work if you rented it on VHS. It doesn't work in that he would have to spend his entire time at the video store. Because if somebody rented that movie and he didn't show up to kill them afterwards,
they would call the police.
They would call the police and he's done for.
I know. So, like, dude, what if he gets into a car accident or has a cold one day? Does he literally just live outside that video? Because that's the thing. Do you live outside that video store now, Kevin? Because, unless I'm mistaken, don't you still have to make money by videographing weddings? What if someone rents it while you're doing that?
Yeah.
You know? Like, it doesn't...
Yeah.
The film's own
premise.
Someone
didn't think this one through.
No, it really didn't. Oh my god. Like, the thing is, if it hadn't been such specific... And by the way, this movie came out in 2003, when video stores were already massively switching over
to DVD.
So, even, like, had this movie come out in 1992... the conceit would have made a little more sense. But in 2003, it's just nonsense, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. And I feel like this film would have worked better not if he said that every person... I mean, I guess I'm now, trying to rewrite his terrible movie, but if not, he's saying every person who rents this is murdered, and it's definitely going to be the last horror movie you ever see... But rather, if he explained that maybe, how do I put this, link leaked to the internet, blah, 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 you have some kind of a conceit like that, and say that, you know, he's somehow tracing, not unlike the movie Chain Letter, and just end it less with a, I'm at your door right now, and more is like, maybe I'll see you soon. Ha ha ha. Something like that.
I can't believe you just said it should be more like Chain Letter.
No, not more like. I'm saying using a conceit similar to that used in terrible film Chain Letter, which, while a terrible film that makes no sense, does make more sense. Yeah, I completely discredited myself, didn't I? Yeah. I have no excuse.
And again, this one also drags on, too.
Oh, my God. Because after he explains the premise, like, where does it have to go?
Nowhere. Down.
You know? Because we've kind of got what he's got going on, right? By the 20-minute mark. We know everything about him. The cannibalism, the murder, why he does it, how he does it, blah, 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 blah. And the, you're watching a movie that's going to kill you, happens at, like, the 70-minute mark. That middle 50 minutes is just watching him kill people over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And, like, you look at Man Bites Dog, there was the way... Oh, okay, there's a subplot about his photographer wanting to kill somebody, then chickening out and getting murdered. But, you know, it's not like we care. You know, we don't care about Kevin. We surely don't care about the guy mutely recording his sins. You know, so, but compared to that, there's no, how do I put this? There's no ethical question in this movie because there are attempts at ethical questions. Aren't you the real murderer by watching? No.
No.
You're the real murderer by murdering. At the same time, but you look at the much smarter version that this movie was ripping off, Man Bites Dog, you have the interesting question, not for you, the audience, but for the documentarians, right? How much are the documentarians complicit in what he's doing? Because there's that wonderful scene in Man Bites Dog where they're essentially, they lose their funding for the movie. And so he starts, when he's killing people, robbing them to keep the documentary going. You know? So you have this idea that maybe producing, you know, these movies about sins keeps it going. That's an interesting idea. And you also have the through line of the guy trying to kill the murderer in Man Bites Dog. So you have both you have a couple of kinds of tension going off while watching scenes of horrible brutality that I feel dirty for having watched. By comparison, this film never pulls you into it in the least. So it can never create that kind of an emotional connection with a film the way you do, because the film frigging, instead of allowing, okay, I'm just going to say this. It's possible that it's just because he's such an unbelievable prick and you have no idea where he's coming from, but the fact that he stops the movie every 2 minutes to call me, the viewer, a bad person and tell me to turn the movie off kind of kept me from getting inside his head.
Well, yeah, I know, like I said, it's the same thing with Funny Games, where they keep breaking the fourth wall and turning to you like, oh, aren't you a bad person? You're complicit in these people's deaths. You want to watch them die. It's like, well, I can just shut you off, and that's what I'm going to do now because you're boring me.
Yeah, I mean, I did turn off Funny Games, but I didn't turn off this because we were covering it for the show. But honestly, if we hadn't been covering it for the show, and if I didn't feel some sort of, and I'm going to use big air quotes here, reviewer's ethics. If I didn't feel some sort of, you know, ethical need to finish watching the movie, I would have turned this movie off.
Me too. 20
minutes in it, because screw you, guy. I know this isn't going anywhere interesting. You know? So what's the point?
God. On that, maybe we should stop talking about it now.
Yeah, I guess so. But you see why I thought, like, this film warranted more discussion, because it was trying. You're right, more complaint. But it was trying to do more, but the filmmakers were completely incapable of offering anything. They have nothing to say. Okay, I'm stopping. But they have nothing to say. They have nothing to say.
Okay. Done, and now you don't have anything to say because we're just talking about
it. I'm talking about the movie. Talking about this movie? Why would I do that? All right. Jeez.
So, let's move on.
Let's completely move on. I'm completely
Speaking of narcissists.
Hey! No, but it's true. My narcissism watch has been packed lately because, you know, I'm posting every day, so I'm not even going to bother shouting out what individual things. Stop by Castle Vargelon, you'll see 7 new things this week. But I do want to give a shout out to the whoever, like, whether it's a bot or someone in Romania who doesn't speak English, who is in charge of web promotion for some hotels and restaurants in Bruges, because it's like not a day goes by that this thing called Hotel Bruges or Romantic Hotel Bruges posts a nice comment on one of my articles. Hoping that someone will click on their name and get, you know, a reservation for a hotel in Bruges. Which, to be fair, I didn't know was a real place other than in that movie. So there you go. Yay!
Really?
No, I didn't know it was a real place.
Oh, because I've been there.
Oh, really? Is it as nice as the movie makes it look?
I haven't seen the movie, but it is a nice place.
Okay. So, apparently the dive mistress is also pro-Bruges tourism. Is it new? Are you making extra money for the Bruges Tourism Board by posting nonsensical, barely English content?
This episode of the Avon is brought to you by the country Belgium.
Oh my god, sorry, I have a good time, what can I say? Do you have anything you want to be narcissistic about, dive mistress?
I don't think so. I posted a thing about Saw that I didn't make. Someone else made it. And I posted, it's a scorecard, actually, for the Saw franchise. So if you're ever wondering exactly how many people died, or, you know, how much each movie cost to make, you can visit zombots.net and look at the scorecard, and you can find out.
Weirdly, do you know what I would be far more interested in finding out?
What?
How much it would have cost to build the hypothetical traps in those movies?
Oh, I don't know.
I would love if someone would estimate that, because that is an article I would love to read.
Well, I'm not going to write that one.
How much these freaking things would cost?
I got other things I'm working on. The pipeline.
Okay. Just how rich is John Kramer, the world's richest psychopath?
Pretty rich, I'd say.
Apparently. Well, he is on the cover of magazines.
Yeah.
You know, as architects tend to be. Now I don't know how this turned into me attacking the Saw films, except in that every conversation I have, if it goes on long enough, does turn into me attacking this off.
Yeah, so this is a good point to end.
Absolutely. End thing. Do we have poll results?
Poll results. We do have poll results.
All right, hit us with those before we go.
Okay, so our poll was, should a theme killer always use weapons related to his theme?
I say yes.
Yes, so did a lot of other people. Yay! Yes is the winner. Yes, a theme killer should always use weapons related to his theme. So keep that in mind, theme killers.
If you're too lazy to come up with a damn theme, get on it!
Seriously, you're going to disappoint a lot of victims otherwise. Just saying.
Yeah, because seriously, who wouldn't be disappointed to be killed by... Actually, I was trying to think about what Jason's themed weapon is, and I have no idea.
A machete.
No, but I'm just saying, he uses a lot of stuff, but you're right. If he doesn't use a machete, or in Freddy vs. Jason, a sword...
Then you know that you mean less to him than some of his other victims.
That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you're right. If Jason was coming after you, I would feel a little disrespected if he didn't use the machete. Like, really? A bush axe? Come on, J-Dog.
You can do better than that, surely.
Alright, so on that bizarre note, I'm going to encourage you to swing by Vargelon.com to read all of the endless things I've plugged.
And do be sure to swing by zombots.net for whatever reason. And visit the AVODs blog at theavod.blogspot.com and vote in our new poll. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com if you've got something you want to say to us. That's it.
That is it. So until next time, as always, I'm going to thank you for watching. We'll see you here. I'm guessing in a week, fingers crossed. Uh-huh. But until then, have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.